Well, Delia Efron, welcome. It's just so exciting to talk to you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to talk to you.
You have released your latest novel, Syracusa, and I'm curious to know whether you identify yourself primarily as a novelist. You've done so many forms of writing, journalistic writing, screenwriting. Do you think of yourself mostly as a writer of novels?
Oh, gosh, I do. Yeah, I absolutely do. But I love that I can move between forms because, I don't know, it's just each one is a different kind of a problem, and each has a different kind of excitement, and each has a different kind of, the experiences are so different. So I love that I can do it. Both the experience of writing, I mean, a film is a collaboration. A book is just your own imagination just writ big, so.
Well, the first thing you say in your acknowledgments is this is a work of fiction, and it's a book full of secrets and plot twists and very deep, interesting, and somewhat dark characters. So that actually was my first question as I finished it. Did this happen to Delia on vacation?
My goodness, no.
or something akin
no,
to it, or a piece of it.
You know, I just put that in there because I just think you're always supposed to say that, you know? But these are all invented. Everything about this is invented. But here's the thing. I was in Syracuse years ago, and I can't remember why. But it's this a magical kind of falling down place in Sicily on the Ionian Sea. And in the old section, in 2012 BC, the Romans knocked all the trees down to build warships, and they didn't plant any. So it's paved over. It's stone. I mean, the ancient footprint rules there. And you're walking down these tiny twisted streets with these tiny little houses that remind you of, you know, how small people were before hormones and milk and everything. And so, I mean, there's a kind of tattered magic to it, but it's stone. It's a stone paradise, mostly. And the first day I was there, I thought, well, this is the most magical place in the world. And the second day I thought, if I don't get out of here soon, I'll go mad. So there was this thing of this place as a character where two couples and a child could be on a trip and things could just go to a boil in this place that seems initially magical. And then as their lives, as the secrets and betrayals in the marriage come to light, it becomes, you know, a place where you go crazy. So I took, you know, I basically took Syracuse as this fabulous setting and character in my book. And then also, I have to tell you, about 100 years ago, some psychoanalyst said to me that what we think of as chemistry is really psychology, that two people falling in love across a crowded room is really just one person spotting its perfect neurotic match, each of them spotting their perfect neurotic match. So I found that so chilling and wonderful. So I took that idea about marriage and married it to Syracuse.
Yeah, you do make some pretty dark observations about marriage and some pretty honest, like bluntly, coldly honest. There's a paragraph that I kind of marked off that in which a character says, there are some people who dump all their misery into marriage, make wedded bliss their neurotic nest, and the best version of them lives outside that ugly place, which I just thought was very observant and scary, too.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it, for some people? This is a story. Syracuse is a story told in four voices. Lizzie and Michael each tell their story, and Finn and Taylor, these are the two couples, all four adults, tell their stories alternately in the book, although it's moving the plot forward, I should say, all the time. It's not repetitive in that way. But each of them has a different relationship to marriage and secrets and betrayal. And that's really about Finn, who is someone who's, you know, I mean, the thing in marriage, do you marry someone who's going to really know you or from whom you can remain hidden in life? And I think Finn married someone that he could remain hidden from, and his sexuality is almost all outer-directed. He makes every experience more fun for everyone. But in his marriage, he's less of a happy person. So each one of them has a different relationship to marriage and the world and even to friendship, because I really do oh gosh, I guess the, wait a minute, let me just say, the first line that told me what this book was about that I wrote was, couples collaborate, hiding even from themselves who is calling the shots and who is along for the ride. And that to me was the imperative of the book as this trip went on.
As you mentioned, you do tell the story through four different narrators. There's one main character whose voice we don't hear, and that's the child's, and she plays a very important role. At first, I'm just wondering, when you first sat down at your computer, did you hear different narrators? Had you already decided this story would be told in this fashion?
I sat down and started it in a burst of inspiration, and it came out this way with four narrators. And then after I wrote those 20 pages and I put a child into it, and a child who is, I knew would be a mystery. I mean, is she shy or is she cunning? Is she manipulating or is she being manipulated? Actually, Michael is having an affair, you find out very early, and he does not want to be on this vacation with his wife, with the isolation and the sexual expectations. I mean, he befriends this shy child as a way to avoid his wife. So, you know, people are guilty in all sorts of different levels of what kind of trouble they cause. And as I didn't quite know where her name is Snow. I didn't quite know where Snow was going, except I knew she moves to the center of the book as the book goes on. She becomes almost the most important character. And you don't really know whether you're supposed to love her or fear her. And, yeah, she was such an important character for me. But I you know, I started it, and then I thought, oh, my gosh, I have to go back to Syracuse. I mean, I was only there 2 days. I couldn't, you know, this was like, so, like, it took me, like, 4 or 5 years to get back there. And then when I did, I traveled as my characters. I mean, you know, what do you do on a vacation? I walk and eat. That's all I do. But... But Taylor is obsessed with culture, and she loves to go to, so I went to the Caravaggio and to the Greek ruins, and Finn likes to go out at night and cruise dive bars. So at 2 in the morning, I found myself in this crazy bar with karaoke blaring and God knows, pool, and I don't know, it was crazy. And Lizzie likes the food markets, and it's a beautiful food market in Syracuse, and it's very humble and irresistible with 15 varieties of oranges and fresh fish and amazing huge peppers. And yeah, it's fantastic. So I went there, and of course Michael's hiding out from everyone. So I had to find these secret little places where Michael might be having coffee that he's spiking with his scotch. So I traveled as other people, and it was so exciting.
The character of Michael, who is the acclaimed Pulitzer Prize winning playwright, and he's kind of stalled working on a longtime novel, or he's
yes, that's right.
He seems to be working on his novel all the time, in his head at
yes.
least. And everything is fodder for his book. I mean, his feelings, his life, his observations about his wife and other people. He always seems to be kind of cruising for things that he can use. And I know writers do that. Is that just an irresistible part of being
writers
an observer?
Are cannibals.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest here. And he is not doing something that every writer doesn't do, stealing from this, that, and the other. You know what I mean? You observe something and it pops right into your book. And when you're writing a book and you're in it, you're constantly looking for things. Your brain is almost subconsciously finding things as you go. And you know, there's Michael and Lizzie in their New York life. You find out that they used to make bets when they went to dinner about what people would talk about or what would be served, or, you know, and there would be a sexual payoff. And I actually knew a couple that once said to me at dinner, we made a bet about whether you'd serve pasta or chicken. And I thought, what, they made a bet about my dinner, you know? And then I thought, and then they said, oh, they do that a lot. You know, so, I mean, I saved that in my head for years, and then they don't have anything to do with this book. But that little detail, I popped it in.
I love children when they're portrayed as not pure goodness and innocence, as they so often are in film and literature sometimes. You don't often
so
get the dark
film,
child character.
On film, they're so cute. It really is kind of paralyzing. And they're always perfect on Facebook. So I had a lot of fun creating Snow because she's very complicated. And also, what I was really interested in is Snow and Taylor, who look quite a lot alike, are very fused. Their boundaries aren't clear. Taylor's her mother. And when Snow was born, it produced such a need to protect, and especially she's a shy child, that they just have, they're merged on some level. And I see that a lot in the world now, that mother, so I really was writing something, but pushing it a little farther, that I see all the time, which is that parents, actually, not just mothers, these days, that they're over-invested in their child. I mean, over, like, they worry so much about whether everything is okay with them, or they'll plan a Halloween party for a month before, or, you know, things to do with their children. And I think also the public face of Facebook is, I've just noticed that. So I was playing off that. And Lizzie doesn't have a child. And I've also noticed in this world now there's real distrust between mothers and women who don't have children, that women who don't, I mean, Lizzie sees Taylor as being a little, as being a little crazy, neurotic as a mother. And Taylor sees Lizzie as someone who doesn't experience the, not just the joy, but the level of empathy and responsibility that a parent has. So there's distrust there. And I was really mining that in terms of my storytelling.
Do your friends look for themselves in your work? Do they
I hope not.
And are they flattered or are they offended if they think they
No, no, no. There's none of my friends in this book, so nobody has done that. Somebody asked me if I based Michael on someone in New York, and I did not. I mean, you know, I think when you write your first book, my first book, Hanging Up, which is about three sisters, I actually have four, but it was about three sisters and the death of their father. It was very, very... it was autobiographical, and I was totally upfront about that. It was my first book, and my first book was, you know, I wanted it to be close to the bone. And most people often write a very personal first book that they fictionalize, but it's close to home. And now this is my fourth or fifth novel, and as adult novel, I've written children's novels. I mean, YA. So I'm not in that world anymore of, you know, quite needing that. My brain has moved on. I thought I hit another gear on this book.
Well, you certainly did. I really couldn't put it down.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear that.
Yeah, I was at first a little startled by the different narrators because we're not entirely used to that. But then I couldn't wait, you know, something happens and you sort of can't wait to hear what the other character, how they see it from their perspective. And it's a very interesting spin around this this trip to Italy. And Delia Efron, thank you so much for making the time and congratulations on the book.
Thank you, Emily. I'm so happy to talk to you.